loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by co-host John Kiriakou. In our first segment, we spend the full hour on the Israeli massacre today in Gaza. People protesting the U.S. embassy having been moved to Jerusalem by Donald Trump were killed and shot at by the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF. More than 50 Palestinians were shot dead today and more than 2,400 wounded.
But before we get to those two stories, we'll go over today's headlines, including five that we'll cover in depth in the second hour. First, firebrand nationalist Iraqi cleric Muqtada as-Sadr's party took a surprise lead in Iraqi elections today, making him the kingmaker in the decision to choose a new prime minister. Sadr has led two uprisings against the United States in Iraq and is seen as the enemy of both the United States and Iran. Next, former CIA officer, peace activist, and frequent guest on this show, Ray McGovern, was arrested last week for allegedly disrupting the Senate Intelligence Committee's hearing on Gina Haspel's nomination to be CIA director. Haspel has a past history as a high-level CIA officer who was integral to the agency's torture program. Prosecutors have now charged Ray with felony resisting arrest. Then today we continue our segment Education for Liberation with Bill Ayers, where Bill helps us look at the state of education across the country. What's happening in our schools, colleges, and universities, and what impact does it have on the world around us? And then nearly 60 protesters who were arrested on Inauguration Day last year are still awaiting trial on federal charges related to wearing masks in public. From an initial group of more than 200 people who faced felony rioting and destruction of property charges, 59 defendants are left. Six were acquitted on all counts in December, and all charges were dropped against more than 100 others. The trial has been delayed because federal prosecutors are having trouble finding expert witnesses to testify against the defendants. And finally, Catalonia has a new premier after 5 months of political deadlock. Quim Torra was handpicked by ousted leader Carles Puigdemont. Torra urged unity among Catalonians and promised to find common ground across the political spectrum. And in other headlines, the Senate Intelligence Committee says it will vote on Wednesday morning on Gina Haspel's nomination to be CIA director, a closed vote by custom. Republicans have indicated that they think they have the votes in Congress that they need to secure her confirmation, but it's not clear what will happen as the vote already has been delayed several times. In a reversal, President Trump announced yesterday that he promised Chinese President Xi Jinping that he would help Chinese tech company ZTE get back on its feet after crippling sanctions imposed by the Commerce Department forced ZTE to almost shut down. This is in exchange for China not hitting U.S. farm goods with tariffs. Italian leaders are nearing a compromise on a political program between the far-right party League and the right-wing populist party, the Five Star Movement. It was expected that the two parties would finalize a prime minister pick and program today, but they have told Italian President Sergio Mattarella that they will need a few more days. The spring offensive by the Taliban continues, with around 100 dead in the past week. Government offices in Jalalabad were attacked on Sunday, with at least 12 killed. This is a part of the spring offensive that the Taliban announced on April 25th, with threats of increased violence that are coming true. Those are today's headlines. Next up is a full hour on the Palestinian deaths in Gaza and the U.S. Embassy opening in Jerusalem. You're listening to Loud and Clear.
Loud and Clear.
The following interview was pre-recorded. It was recorded today between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time in Washington, D.C. Since then, many, many more people in Gaza have been shot, and there are many more deaths. Now we turn to our lead story in this hour, the U.S. Embassy opening in Jerusalem. At least 41 Palestinians have been killed. That's as of this morning. More than 1,900 wounded as Israeli soldiers opened fire on demonstrators in the Gaza Strip. The violence came as the U.S. opened its embassy in Jerusalem today, a move that has infuriated Palestinians and people all over the world. We're joined from Jerusalem by Bob Schlehuber. He's the producer of the Sputnik radio show, By Any Means Necessary. And we're joined from Ramallah by Ara Barghouti. He is a peace and Palestinian rights activist and the son of Marwan Barghouti, an imprisoned Palestinian activist who was regarded as the father of the first and second intifadas. And we're joined from Washington, D.C. by Dan Cohen, journalist and filmmaker who has spent time in Gaza documenting the atrocities committed by Israel. We're also going to be joined in the second half hour by Richard Becker, who is an author of the book Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. Welcome to all of you.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ara Barghouti, tell us what's going on today. I mean, we're just seeing, of course, reports from the Western media, from the Washington Post, the CNN. You know, most of the coverage is about the celebration at the embassy. Donald Trump and, you know, Sheldon Adelson and Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. And that's the story. But talk about what's actually going on the ground.
Yeah, as you said, it's really sad that this part is getting covered by the media, and the part that more than 500,000 Palestinians went on protests expressing their sadness, their anger by the American administration's decision in moving the American embassy to Jerusalem. We have, as you said, more than 40 people killed. We have more than 1,900 people wounded. Gaza is now on the east side of Gaza. There is all kinds of shootings against Palestinians who are really non-armed Palestinians. They are shooting and killing anyone, regardless of your gender, age, whatever. They don't care. And they know that the whole coverage is going to be on Jerusalem, so that's good for them to do whatever they want. In the West Bank, there has been a lot of smaller protests. And I mean, we all know that this was going to happen. The Israeli government knew this was going to happen. The American government, everyone knew this, this is going to happen. Because as Palestinians, when we see that we're losing Jerusalem, this is the heart of the conflict. This is the heart of the Palestinian cause. And we feel like our hearts have been taken from us. And there's nothing to live for if there's no Jerusalem for Palestinians. This is really the headlines that everyone is saying. And we are really sick and bored and done by the idea of expressing ourselves as peaceful people who just want peace. I mean, just come and see what's going on the ground. It's just a bunch of barbaric soldiers killing non-armed Palestinians on the streets. This is exactly what's happening. In Gaza, it's been happening for years. Here in the West Bank, it happens from time to time. And it's really sad that all the media coverage is covering the celebration, which is really, I can't even watch the celebration by the politicians who have nothing, no relations, absolutely no relations with this land. And they are celebrating this as if they won this by like justice or anything. Like it's just frustrating. And hearing the voices, I was just sitting with a guy who lost his cousin in Gaza and he can't go to Gaza. This is our daily life with the occupation. But for me and for every Palestinian, this is not the end. We're going to keep going and keep resisting the illegal Israeli occupation. And we will always say that we have the right in Jerusalem.
That's the voice of Ara Barghouti, peace activist, organizer in support of the Palestinian people's right to exist, the right to self-determination. He is also the son of imprisoned Marwan Barghouti. Bob Schlehuber, you're back at the U.S. Embassy. You're there with a Sputnik crew covering the events. You were earlier today, you were in Ramallah, where Ara Barghouti is. What are you looking at? What did you see today?
Today was a surreal day. We're currently just outside what is now being called the U.S. Embassy here in Jerusalem. I'm looking at a large sign that says, God bless President Donald Trump. God bless America. Hallelujah. And obviously, you can't spell Jerusalem without USA, according to one sign here. Here in Jerusalem itself, heavy security presence. No citizens able to get anywhere close if they were not invited to the actual ceremonies and events. Within 500 meters or so, a long drive to actually be able to get anywhere near the presentation and the opening of the embassy. About 150, 200 Palestinians, as well as Israeli Jews, joined the protest, heavily guarded by military, yet the military here was in primarily police mode. They were not in riot gear, doing everything they could to make sure that the cameras caught what they wanted to be considered peaceful protesters being peacefully guarded by the Israeli police to continue to put on a good show. About 12 or 15 different protesters while we were here over the 2 hours were forcibly moved from the crowd. So the embassy is now open. And what Arav was saying, being in Ramallah this morning, I think for me it was so refreshing to see as well. It was an observation day of the Nakba, but people with flags, people with culture and community, people being in community together in the cafes, parading together, playing music, was great to see. And then you see, obviously, then at the checkpoint at Kalandia, we were witness to maybe 10, 15 young people throwing stones at the soldiers, and the soldiers returning tear gas and rubber bullets indiscriminately. And several times there with a pool of media, the Israeli soldiers could care less about the right of the press, pushing people off to the side and being confrontational with the media this morning. The main crossing point was shut down to most people except by foot for the handful of us that were able to cross. But again, a surreal 24 hours with the opening of the embassy coming on the heels of the 51st celebration by the Israelis for Jerusalem reunification, as well as the Nakba Day today.
Dan Cohen, one of the things that's really noteworthy, by the way, everybody, I'm looking just as we're speaking about the coverage, actually the protests and the shooting of people is now the front page of the New York Times. The headline is Israel kills at least 41 as Palestinians try to cross border. But Dan, the thing that jumps out at me and has jumped out in the last couple of days is the press coverage. Here's the Washington Post yesterday, and it's all about Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner being there. Here's a sentence, and then I want you to react. But Israel is not letting the threat of violence dull its party. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs gathered 1,000 guests for a celebratory event at the ministry grounds on Sunday. Among them were Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and billionaire casino magnate Sheldon Adelson. I mean, this is sort of such awful coverage. I mean, the threat of violence, here you have Israel shooting unarmed protesters, but the threat of violence will not allow Israel to dull its enthusiasm for, quote, its party. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I think what you just described really encapsulates Western media coverage of, you know, the so-called conflict between Israel and Palestine, where Western media is completely biased and one-sided, what is clearly a massacre. I mean, that's not a controversial term at all. The Israeli soldiers have killed more than 40 unarmed Palestinian protesters. That's simply a bloodbath and should be called as such. But Western media is hesitant to admit that. I mean, the New York Times headline that you mentioned, I see it here, Israel kills at least 41. I mean, finally, they're starting to show. I criticized the New York Times earlier this morning on Twitter for another terrible headline. And so I think they're responding to a little bit of public criticism. But focus, instead of, you know, this massive bloodbath of unarmed protesters, is simply on, you know, on this massive win, what's called, you know, being called a win for Israel, as if this is actually good for the average Israeli and not simply for, you know, the ruling class who wants this bloodbath. And so we see elite media, elite Western media, basically, you know, cheering on Israel as it guns down protesters, and the Jerusalem embassy opening kind of being treated as like a gala, you know, as a gala where, you know, this beautiful event of very esteemed people. And so, you know, I think we really see Western media's terrible coverage, and we need to challenge that.
That's the voice of Dan Cohen, filmmaker. He has recently made a movie called Killing Gaza with Max Blumenthal. Arab Barghouti is also on the line. Arab is talking to us from Ramallah. We're also on with Bob Schlehuber. He's a producer with By Any Means Necessary here at Radio Sputnik. Sputnik has a crew that's there covering the events the embassy opening and the protests and the what Dan Cohen is describing correctly as the massacre of unarmed protesters. Arab Barghouti, you know, if any other government in the world today opened fire and shot, wounded 1,900 people, killed more than 40 in unarmed protesters, there would be blazing headlines condemning that. And especially if those governments say, where if it was China or if it was Russia, if it was Venezuela, any of the governments that the U.S. doesn't support, but even the governments that the U.S. does support, let's say if this happened in Saudi Arabia or other places in the Middle East, certainly it would become a thing. And yet, you know, there's such an embrace of Israeli violence against unarmed protesters. It's an embrace. It's a complete embrace. It's like, how dare these Palestinians get in the way of our celebration, which is basically the annexation of a historic, perhaps one of the most historic Arab cities in the Middle East, in the region. From your point of view, Arab Barghouti, what accounts for the U.S. position?
It's obvious. I mean, as you said, if this happened in any other country in the world, it would have been like the headline on any newspaper, any channel, TV channel. But if you open any political TV channel in the U.S. right now, you're going to see the celebration. You're going to see them talking about what Ivanka Trump is wearing right now, fashion and stuff like that. But this is exactly what the American media has succeeded in doing, which is making the Palestinian blood cheaper than the Israeli blood. Let's say it as it is. Honestly, if you look at the numbers, 5 Palestinian to 1 have been killed in the last 30 years. The same with people wounded. No, maybe 5 or 6 Israeli soldiers have been arrested, while 1 million Palestinian people have been arrested in the last 50 years. This gives you that there hasn't been a balance, a real balance, a real justice for the Palestinians whatsoever since 1948. The other thing is that they chose this date to also maybe make fun of Palestinians. Like, we really, they deal with us as if we don't have anything to give, we don't have anything to sacrifice, we don't have anything to do about what they are doing. And they are led by a crazy man called Donald Trump, which, with all due respect to every American, I just can't understand how this guy is the American president. And this makes me sad from the media coverage. But what it means a lot more than them moving just an embassy. It will be the start of a new era. It will be the start of the denial of the real existence of Palestinians. We now own 14% of the land after signing on 22% 20 years ago. And it's not going higher, it's going less with years. And we really feel that we are surrounded. And I'm not shy to say that even the Arab governments, as you mentioned, the Saudi Arabian government has been one of the biggest sponsors of the deal of the century, quote-unquote, by Donald Trump. And this is just a sad story. By isolating an innocent, a whole innocent people, isolating them from the whole world and doing whatever they want with us. But we still have hope. We still are positive about the media coverage that at some point it's going to show the truth. And I'm sure anyone in the world who can see the truth will be moved and will support the Palestinian right of existence, because we're not asking for the denial of the Israeli existence. We're only asking for the right of our existence. And this has a lot of meanings for us as Palestinians. We've been living this life forever. It's not a highlight. It's not news for us. We're sadly used to what's going on, but we never lost hope. And you can see that from the protests that went today, and it will keep going forever until we gain our right.
That's the voice of Arab Barghouti. He is the son of Marwan Barghouti. He's also an activist organizer, Marwan Barghouti, his father is frequently referred to as the Nelson Mandela of Palestine. He's been in prison for many years, Israeli prison. He was a leader, the leader, really, of the Palestinian prisoners' hunger strike, demanding basic improvement or improvement in basic life inside of these prisons. We're also speaking with Bob Schlehuber. He is a Sputnik news analyst and producer with the show By Any Means Necessary with Eugene Puryear and Sean Blackman. Bob is in Israel, in Palestine, to cover the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. He's also been, as he told us earlier today, in Ramallah, where there were protests. And we're joined by filmmaker and journalist Dan Cohen. You're listening to Loud and Clear. You can hear us every day, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. at 105.5 FM and at 1390 AM. Bob Schlehuber, I mean, you're there now in Jerusalem. You've been to Palestine before. When you think about where things are right now compared to, say, the last time you were there, what's the big takeaway?
I think at least I just want to say with what Arab was saying with, he can't believe Donald Trump is the president of America. I can't believe he's not. I mean, it makes sense that he is, right? I mean, I think the biggest thing to see here is a complete relationship and the symbiotic relationship between Israel and the United States. You have belligerent leaders who rule off of fear, rule off of manipulation of news, of media, play off of attacking and being aggressive towards innocent people, but making them look like they're the ones that are being provocateurs and they're the ones carrying out attacks. I mean, it was shocking to talk to a young 17-year-old Israeli boy today who had recently graduated, saying that the best thing that could have ever happened for the peace process was for the U.S. to recognize Jerusalem as its capital, because it finally takes Jerusalem off of the negotiating table. And that was the biggest sticking point, he said. And so he was so thankful for Donald Trump, and that the Palestinians ruled by Abbas were never going to be partners for peace or good negotiators, because all of them wanted violence and were terrorists. And I said, have you ever met a Palestinian? And he said, no. And so when you have an apathetic populace who is focused on greed and making sure their selves are protected with a narrative that tells them that they're under attack and that to be great again, for me, seeing the relationship between Donald Trump and now Benjamin Netanyahu strengthened through this opening is in many ways, sadly, not surprising that it's going down this path. And to see so many people just belligerently celebrating, it felt like 4th of July in America here yesterday with Israel celebrating, people waving flags around while their government, no more than 10 miles to the west of Jerusalem, was shooting at people throwing stones today. And their government, 50 miles to the east, was killing innocent people, or to the west, excuse me, innocent people in Gaza while they celebrate what their country is doing. So for me, it makes every sense that Donald Trump is the president of the United States, and the symbiotic relationship of the United States and Israel is only strengthened by this opening of the embassy today.
Dan Cohen, I also actually share Arab Barghouti's sort of shock that Donald Trump is the president of the United States. And of course, Trump is proceeding in a, although I hear Bob on his main point about the belligerency of the United States. So, of course, the policy by the United States towards Israel, that's not a partisan affair, whether it's a centrist Democrat like Obama or a hard right Republican like Donald Trump or earlier George W. Bush or Bill Clinton. The constancy, the continuity of U.S. policy is such that at least since 1967, during the after the June 67 war, the United States, it seems to me, has had an unchanging policy towards Israel, which is to give Israel a blank check and also to, you know, make sure that Israel is the largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid and military aid and economic aid. There's a constancy to that. But what Trump has done here by opening the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem is a wild and excessive provocation. It's gratuitous in the sense that Israel was already controlling everything. Why do you think Trump did it? Was it because of Sheldon Adelson? Is it because of his right-wing donor base? Is it because of Trump himself? Why did he do this?
Well, I think we have to follow the money. And like you said, we look at Sheldon Adelson, the right-wing billionaire casino magnate who funded, who was the largest donor to the Trump campaign. He is a major funder to Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. He has, you know, called for dropping a nuclear bomb on Iran. He's a total fanatic. Actually, he even was angry at Benjamin Netanyahu for using this embassy opening as kind of a political tool, when Adelson is much more of an ideologue, a committed Zionist ideologue. We simply wanted it to be done, not for his own political survival, but because of his own political beliefs. Also, I think we have to look at Trump's disdain for Obama, and, you know, just simply wanting to undo anything Obama might, to kind of like stick it to him. And, you know, I think one of the reasons Trump is decertifying the, is pulling out or breaking the Iran deal, I think there are a number of factors that go into it, but the major factor is, I think, the funding. Who's paying for this? I think, you know, in terms of Trump becoming president of the United States and making this, you know, very, I don't even want to call it provocative, but kind of sticking, you know, a fork in the eye of Palestinians, and then just, you know, letting Israel, watching Israel gun them down, it kind of shows the discrediting. To me, it's discrediting of the U.S. as any kind of neutral arbiter or you know, any that it has any interest in advancing an actual peace process. And we see that this is what the peace process has achieved, is only more blood, more dead Palestinians, more settlements and land confiscation. And so it's just the discrediting of the U.S. empire and its allies on a global scale. And we're seeing it really play out today. You know, one of the other points I think is important to make is that, unlike, you know, kind of designated enemies of the West, whether Syria, Venezuela, you know, Iran, we don't see these same calls for humanitarian intervention from kind of, you know, faux humanitarians in the West calling for, you know, invoking the responsibility to protect. Where is Samantha Power demanding a no-fly zone over Gaza, you know, to stop the Israeli military dictatorship? These kinds of calls for military intervention are only reserved for designated, you know, NATO or Western enemy states. And, you know, in light of a clear, abundantly clear massacre committed by the U.S.'s closest ally, which, as Brian, you pointed out, has total bipartisan support from the, you know, Democratic Party to the Republican Party, there's none of those calls.
We're going to pick this discussion up. That's the voice of Dan Cohen, filmmaker and journalist. We're also speaking with Bob Schlehuber and Ara Barghouti. Bob is in Jerusalem. Ara Barghouti's in Ramallah. We're going to take a short break, and after that break, we'll be right back. Stay with us here at Loud and Clear.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker. The following interview was pre-recorded. It was recorded today between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time in Washington, D.C. Since then, many, many more people in Gaza have been shot, and there are many more deaths. In this segment, we continue our discussion on the U.S. embassy opening in Jerusalem and the fact that the Israeli government today has killed more than 40 Palestinians, unarmed protesters, 1,900 or more wounded so far. We're joined from Ramallah by Ara Barghouti. He is a peace and Palestinian rights activist. He's the son of Marwan Barghouti, an imprisoned Palestinian leader who is regarded as the father of the first and second intifadas. We're joined from Washington by Dan Cohen. He's a journalist and filmmaker. He spent a long time in Gaza documenting Israeli atrocities. And in this half an hour, we'll be joined from San Francisco by Richard Becker. Richard Becker is the author of the book Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. Richard Becker, welcome. Ara Barghouti and Dan Cohen, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Ara Barghouti, again, let's start with you. You're there. You're in Ramallah. Your father is one of the leaders of the Palestinian people. I think it's so important for the audience here to understand that as Israeli land has been taken, for the last 70 years, ever since the formation of the State of Israel. And at the time, 700,000 Palestinians were expelled from their villages and their towns after Deir Yassin massacre and other uses of terror, and people driven into refugee camps and driven abroad. And yet, and even though the Israeli government seems to want to just, you know, make all of the Palestinian people disappear as a consequence of making life so, so hard that it's almost impossible to live. It's impossible to travel. It's impossible to work. It's impossible to get water. It's impossible to not be shot when you're having unarmed protests. In spite of all of that, Palestine continues, not because of land per se, but because of the consciousness of the people to resist. In other words, this, it seems to me that the identity of Palestine as an existing living reality is tied up with the political consciousness of the people. And you yourself, your dad is in prison. He's been in prison for so long. And yet this kind of, in spite of all of the hardships, this untiring activism, talk about why that is.
That's because we've been raised on this our whole lives. As I said, this is not a highlight in our life. This is our whole life. Like for me personally, I've been raised, I was born in Jerusalem, and now I can't go to Jerusalem. While anyone, let's say, for example, from Poland, from New York, from anywhere, they can easily visit Jerusalem just with booking a flight overnight. This is just a small example of the suffering that we experience on daily basis. We're not talking, of course, about the checkpoints on daily basis when you want to move from a city to another. My generation has experienced the second intifada in the worst case, which we were little kids. We didn't know what was going on. I have a lot of friends who lost their loved ones. As you all know, I haven't touched my father in 16 years now because he has been in Israeli jail. He's a parliament member, a very well-respected politician. His nickname is the Palestinian Mandela. He has PhD. He's nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. So you're talking about prominent leaders that have been suffering just because this is because of the injustice that we live in. When you see a whole generation that have been raised on this, you're going to see a hunger towards justice. You're going to see people working day in, day out just to get their freedom and to get their right of existence, basically. I'm not surprised, and I'm not going to be surprised if in 20 years we had the same conversation about Palestinians being protesting and refusing the illegal Israeli occupation. But what's shocking me is that the whole world and the whole world politics is expecting Palestinians to really just shut up and stay in their homes, looking at the Israeli government demolishing houses on a daily basis, building more settlements. Like, literally, I saw two settlements in the last few months getting built from somewhere that I can see from my own house. This gives you an example of what the Israeli government is trying to do. It's trying to make it impossible for us Palestinians to live here. The apartheid wall that they built and the right of return for Palestinians that have been living for 70 years in refugee camps, which is really sad. But at the same time, as I told you, this is because of the hunger of freedom, the hunger of justice, the hunger of living a normal life. As I always say, we Palestinians don't dream of protesting, don't dream of violence. But we have no other choice. Like, if we don't resist, they're just going to deny our existence, and we're not going to be here on this land that we all have the right to be in.
That's Arab Barghouti. His father, Marwan Barghouti, is known by many as the Mandela of Palestine. He's been in prison for a long time. Ara Barghouti is talking to us from Ramallah. Dan Cohen is another guest. He's a journalist, a filmmaker. His movie, Killing Gaza, coming out soon. Dan, I know you have to run, but I think it's so critically important that the American people actually know what's going on, and you're not going to learn what's going on if you're only getting your news from the corporate-owned media. That's why this film, the film that you and Max Blumenthal have made, is so important. Just talk about what the name of the film, how people can get it, when it's coming out. Go ahead.
Well, the film is called Killing Gaza. We made it. It documents the Israeli assault, the 51-day war on Gaza in 2014, and the aftermath. I continued to go back to Gaza after, you know, the foreign press had left, and I documented what it's like to live under siege and live in these everyday crises through the summer, and how people coped and lived and died in these conditions. And we're releasing the film tonight to coincide with Nakba Day, which is, you know, turning out. I mean, today is now the greatest bout of Israeli violence on Gaza since the 51-day war. And so we want viewers to be able to understand the context of what Gaza is, what, you know, to be able to just peek into the reality, the brutal reality that Gaza is living under siege in between Israeli massacres. We are releasing it on Vimeo. So if you search, you can go to our website, killinggaza.com, and we'll have a link there. And I think that's the best way to do it. So please, everyone, watch, share, and leave us your feedback.
Okay, great. We encourage people to do that, and we'll give some of that information again at the end of the show. Dan Cohen has to go. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, we're going to turn now to Richard Becker. He's the author of the book Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. We're going to give some of the information about how people can get that book as well. But Richard, before we turn to you, I want to play an audio clip of Donald Trump's message to the celebration of the opening of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Let's listen, and then we'll get your feedback.
Exactly 70 years ago, the United States, under President Harry Truman, became the first nation to recognize the State of Israel. Today, we officially open the United States Embassy in Jerusalem. Congratulations. It's been a long time coming. Almost immediately after declaring statehood in 1948, Israel designated the city of Jerusalem as its capital. The capital, the Jewish people established in ancient times. So important.
Richard Becker, your reaction to Donald Trump.
Well, this is really an outrageous statement, and I think most of the world views it that way. The last time that there was a Kingdom of Israel with its capital in Jerusalem was, I think, around 530 BCE. You know, the idea that Trump can pronounce that the rights of the Palestinian people have been terminated, and then claim that this is in regard to Jerusalem, and then claim that this is taking a contentious issue off the table, you know, defies any kind of logic whatsoever. But that's logic is not what this is about, and you can see it by the way the media coverage. You know, today the first headlines I saw said deadly clashes in Gaza. Well, the deadly clashes, the death and the injury is all happening on one side. It's all happening on the Palestinian side. But they are represented in the mainstream media here. The Palestinians are represented as being the cause of the quote-unquote violence. Violence is only what Palestinians do. The shooting down, according to the mainstream media here, of unarmed protesters who are trapped inside the biggest open-air prison in the world, you know, that's not considered. That's not given the label. It's really the vocabulary of colonialism that we hear over and over again. And I wanted to say one thing in regard to Ara Barghouti's father, Marwan Barghouti, who is a heroic figure and a steadfast fighter for liberation, that he's one of more than 6,000 political prisoners who at the end of April were locked up illegally, all of them illegally in violation of international law inside Israeli prisons. And if we only knew one fact about the situation there. And that fact was that there are more than 6,000 Palestinians in Israeli jails and exactly zero Israelis in Palestinian jails, then we would know immediately who is the colonizer and who's the colonized, who's the oppressor and who's the oppressed. And yet that simple fact that demonstrates that must be hidden from the people of the United States by the corporate media, because just to say that would explain the real relationship of forces and the real relationship of that exists there. And the same goes for what's happened in Gaza now. There are no reported Israeli casualties, none. And this is 8 weeks that the struggle has been going on, the Great March of Return, the protests, and yet there are no Israeli injuries. There are now reportedly over 80, and I think it's going to go up, Palestinians killed and thousands wounded. And as one article put it in its headline a few weeks ago, it's the maiming fields, that the Israeli troops are mostly shooting Palestinians in the legs with what are called butterfly bullets. So, I mean, a lot of people are being killed, not just shot in the legs, but many, many hundreds of people are losing their limbs, are having legs amputated. And either that or they won't really be able to recover because there's not sufficient medical care inside Gaza to take care of them. So we're getting the presentation here. What we get from the corporate media is so incredibly one-sided and so incredibly distorted, but it has to be in order to cover the reality, to hide the reality from the American people.
That's Richard Becker. He is the author of the book, Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. It's an important book, important especially for people who are just learning about this struggle. You can buy that book at store.pslweb.org or by going to liberationnews.org, or you can buy it at Amazon. Again, prefer to go to the publishers rather than Amazon. But the name of the book is Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire by Richard Becker, one of our guests. Ara Barghouti, when you heard Donald Trump's message to the opening of the embassy, he's citing events, as Richard mentioned, that are like 2,500 years old, as if God gave Jerusalem to the Jewish people and obviously now to the state of Israel. But Jerusalem historically was a critically important center, and you were born there, for Muslims, for Christians, for Jews. I mean, I grew up as in a Christian family. Jerusalem was primary to Christianity, and it's certainly primary to Islam, with the Al-Aqsa Mosque, perhaps the third holiest shrine in Islam. I mean, when you think of the narrative here, and again, I think Richard Becker is right, the narrative is just the narrative. It's actually not the reality of what's going on. But you can't explain this as anything other than racism, actually, against people who are not Jewish people, who are the indigenous Arab and Muslim people. And of course, over the thousands of years, Jews, Christians, and Muslims in Jerusalem and throughout historic Palestine live together in peace. I mean, that's another thing that people in the West just actually don't know, is that there's not this inherent foundational animosity between the different peoples or different religions. Perhaps they're not even different peoples originally. But this is really about colonialism. Go ahead.
I totally agree with you. I mean, this is exactly what colonialism is all about. It's like going into the history of a country, which happened in Palestine, looking at all the kinds of people who lived in this land, which has been here forever. And as you mentioned, one of the holiest places in the whole world and in history. And they looked at just one era where it had Jews in Jerusalem, and they chose, yeah, these people, let's go with these people, this country and this land belongs to these people. This is ridiculous. I mean, you mentioned Al-Aqsa, you mentioned the churches. I mean, Ramallah City, which I've lived my whole life in, is a Christian city. I was raised in a Christian school, and this is the beauty about Palestine. This is what we've been raised for, and I have Jewish friends all over the world, not only in here, but also in the U.S., especially since I lived there. But honestly, this is just frustrating that it's coming from what I call the reality show star, Donald Trump, that came and decided such a historic land and said that, yeah, this belongs to Israel. I mean, if you look as a Palestinian, now, the peace process, we have five fundamental issues. And the first one is the East Jerusalem. We're only asking for East Jerusalem to be our capital. Okay, then we're asking for the right of return. What are we going to do with 6 to 7 million Palestinians that have been exiled from Palestine for 70 years, living in refugee camps? You can visit Lebanon, you can visit Jordan, all over the world. You're going to see a good percentage of these Palestinians living in the worst conditions ever. What about Gaza Strip, which is the biggest prison in the biggest open air prison in the world? They can't go nowhere. Literally, they can't leave Gaza. They can't go to the Israeli side. They are denied in the Egyptian side, and they get killed if they protest. As simple as that. They don't have like the highest unemployment rate in the world, and they have really, really bad issues, like the water issues. They don't have any water to drink from. Just 10% of the water can be drank. And the fourth thing is the apartheid wall. We are being dealt with as animals. They built a wall to, quote-unquote, protect themselves from the barbarity of the Palestinians. And this is just, I mean, if you look, if you come to the ground here and see what's going on, you're going to see that this is one of the biggest jokes in the modern history. And the fifth thing is the settlements. And if you look at the American embassy in Israel, David Friedman, he's one of the biggest funders of the settlements. He was heading an institution which was donating to the settlements $2 million a year. And he is someone who doesn't believe in the right of existence of Palestinians. And that's who is the American ambassador in Israel. What hope do we have? I mean, the five fundamental things that we are asking for in order to have our independent country are being refused and denied. And if we go protest, they're going to kill us. If we do anything, they will arrest us. If we say anything, like when I came back here, they interrogated with me at the borders just because I spoke out in the U.S. about the hunger strike for the Palestinian political prisoners. This is 2018, and you have millions of Palestinians living in these conditions. You have prisoners here and there. You have people getting killed. You have unemployment rate, which is unbelievable. And everyone is just looking for the Palestinians. As if we are really doing all this, if we are enjoying the violence, what they call the violence. I don't know what violence they are talking about when you have one side that no one soldier, not even one soldier, was wounded, and the other side has 41 people killed at the same day. And now it's really increasing. Whenever I look at my phone, it's just another number. But for us, it's not a number. These are people. These have families. They have kids. They have schools. And for the world to look at the Palestinians as if we have cheaper blood than anyone else in the world, this is unacceptable. And this is what keeps us going until we have our rights.
That's Arab Barghouti. Arab is the son of Marwan Barghouti, an imprisoned Palestinian leader, regarded by many as the Nelson Mandela of Palestine. Arab is a peace and Palestine rights activist. We're also joined in this half hour by Richard Becker. Richard is the author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. We're going to hear another audio clip, and it's a short clip. Again, it's Donald Trump, Richard. And then I want to come back to you and talk again about why the U.S. actually supports Israel. Let's listen to Trump.
The United States will always be a great friend of Israel and a partner in the cause of freedom and peace.
Well, of course, it's not the cause of peace or freedom, because since we started this show, the number of people dead, as Ara Barghouti is saying, has gone up. When we started this show, it was 39 Palestinians dead. Then it was 41. Now it's gone over 40. It's 43. The number of people who were shot by Israel, unarmed protesters, was 1,900 a half an hour ago. The number now is over 2,000. It's going to keep going up and up and up all day long and again tomorrow. Why is the United States, given the fact that it's not the cause of freedom or peace, why is the United States such a great friend of the state of Israel from your point of view? And of course, I think that's really the thesis of your book. Go ahead.
Well, I think that one thing that we should take note of that happened today that's very illuminating about the real relationship and the motivations is that the person that Trump chose to give the opening prayer at this grotesque celebration that's taking place in Jerusalem is a man named Robert Jeffress. And Jeffress is an infamous racist who says that Muslims and Mormons are from quote unquote the pits of hell, and that being Jewish cannot save you. In other words, he's having an extreme anti-Semite open the ceremony. And that should show us that for all those who think, have any notion that this is out of sympathy with Jewish people, or because, you know, the line that we get from some is that, well, it's the pro-Israel lobby that determines things, you know, the U.S. policy and so forth. No, Israel is part of the U.S. empire. It's not the other way around. It's the U.S. empire. It's the most far-flung empire that has ever existed. It has military bases, 1,000 military bases or more in countries all over the world. And Israel has been built up as a really kind of a sub-imperialist power, given this immense power by the United States and by other imperialist countries. France helped it develop the nuclear weapons. The U.S. is armed. It's given hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in military aid to the state of Israel. And it's really precisely for that reason that the U.S. needs allies to help control, to be the dominant power in the world, and particularly to establish control to the extent that it can in the Middle East. So, you know, and I think another thing just to clarify along this line is that there are some who say, well, the U.S. support for the State of Israel, for its creation, and for sustaining it and building it up all this time is against the quote-unquote national interest of the United States. But the national interest of the United States is not determined by the people of the United States. What the United States foreign policy is determined by those who are really the servitors of the big banks and corporations and the military-industrial complex in the United States. They're not out there to serve the interest of the people of the United States. They're there to serve the interest of this far-flung empire. And so what we see going on today is really in the interest of empire, and the massacre that is taking place, and we should call it that. We should call it a massacre. It's not deadly clashes. It's a massacre. And it's, you know, the State of Israel last month, April 9th, marked the 70th anniversary of the Deir Yassin massacre, when the Israeli leaders, and they were about to form the Israeli state, concluded that their strategy in the war had to shift, and they implemented something called Plan D. And Plan D was, the emblem of it was the Deir Yassin massacre on April 9th, 1948, followed by many, many other massacres that made it possible to clear the population. It was only by means of massacre and terror that the Palestinians, most of the Palestinian population, was forced out at that time. to make way for the creation of the State of Israel. And today, on this grotesque day when the Israeli Independence Day, as they call it, we see the massacre being carried out again.
That's the voice of Richard Becker. You can get his book, Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire at store.pslweb.org or at liberationnews.org or at Amazon. Ara Barghouti, 45 seconds left. You get the last word. What's the basic message of the Palestinian people right now, today?
We're not asking for anything other than our basic human rights, which is the right of deciding whatever we want for our country. We are dreaming of having independence, which is a basic right. We shouldn't be dreaming in 2018. And the second thing I want to say, and last thing, is I don't know why people are still discussing the peace process. I don't think there is any kind of peace that is going to happen in the near future as long as Netanyahu and Donald Trump are leading this process and anyone like them, because this has to be done by real people who want real peace for both people. And we have been always opening our arms for any true attempt of any peace talks.
Very well stated. That's the eloquent voice of Ara Barghouti. He's a peace and Palestinian rights activist. He's the son of Marwan Barghouti, imprisoned Palestinian leader. We were joined earlier by Dan Cohen. Dan is a journalist and filmmaker, spent years in Gaza documenting Israeli atrocities. His new film, Killing Gaza, will be available tonight at midnight at vimeo.com/on-demand/killing-gaza. We've also been joined from San Francisco by Richard Becker. He's the author of Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. Empire. You can get his book at store.pslweb.org. You're listening to Loud and Clear. After a short break, we'll be right back.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.